My name's Arden Zwelling. That's Ben Nicholson Smith. Thank you very much. We work for Sportsnet. We have, as do many people in this room, and we have a little podcast called At the Letters. If you could go home and subscribe to it, and then rate it, and then review it.
It's a big ask. That's a lot of favors.
And then, like, send us a personal check and, like, pay our bills. That'd be pretty cool. Let's start with a poll, because we're going to talk about Marcus Stroman. I want to start with a poll of the room. Let's start this way. Who here is concerned about Marcus Stroman by a show of hands? I know this guy is. So that's a good 60-65%. Who here thinks Marcus Stroman should be sent to Buffalo to figure it out? No one. I'm shocked, actually. You're clearly not in my Twitter mentions if you're not putting up your hands right now. I don't even have to ask the third one then, which was going to be, should they just like put Marcus Stroman on a boat and dump him off the back into the ocean, into the lake, and you know, with anvils around his ankles. So I didn't even have to ask that one. So everybody here seems to think Marcus Stroman should be given a shot to continue pitching. He's been very bad. Claps, he's been very bad. Five of his last seven starts have been very poor. Nobody in the major leagues has given up more hits of 99 miles per hour or more than Marcus Stroman. He's given up triple digits, over 100. Next closest is Mike Leake, and he's like 25 back. He's getting smoked.
Yeah, it's a ton of hard contact. The results aren't there. I mean, basically none of the things that you would look for in a pitcher, aside from, I guess, ground balls. He gets the ground balls.
The most of anybody in baseball still,
I think. And that's about it. That's where the success for Stroman ends this year. And so they do have to figure something out. It shouldn't be at AAA. He's one of their five best starters, but they are looking for answers.
If you're putting a ball in play against Marcus Stroman right now, you're either hitting it on the ground or you're hitting it at like 110 miles an hour.
Yeah, or sometimes both.
Sometimes both. Yeah. Exactly. What do you think the Blue Jays do here with Marcus Stroman? It's clear. I mean, he's their worst pitcher at the moment. He started on opening day. What should the strategy be for the Toronto Blue Jays?
I think that it's so boring, but I think a wait and see approach is fine here. I think that this guy has deserved more chances. He's still one of their five best starters, so it's okay to just say we don't have the answers now, but we think we're going to get them by waiting it out and by giving him more chances to prove that this stuff that he has, which is pretty obviously impressive, that it can play, that it can continue to play at the big league level.
I think a thing a lot of people are overlooking is that four of his last five starts have been against the Red Sox and the Orioles. And the other start, the outlier of that group, is one where he pitched very, very well against Philadelphia Phillies.
Yeah.
And people like to shit all over the Phillies and shit all over the Twins, which are the last two teams that Marcus Stroman pitched well against. Major league hitters.
Right. I mean,
still major league hitters.
The Phillies are a truly atrocious lineup. But yeah, they are major leaguers. They are major league hitters.
Yeah. They're in the league. They're getting paid, hundreds of thousands of dollars, in some cases millions of dollars, to hit baseballs.
Right.
And Marcus Stroman dominated both those lineups, and he's had trouble against the Orioles and Red Sox, who clearly have seen a lot of him lately, and a lot of him since he's been in the league. So I feel like there's something there.
Do you kind of take that wait-and-see approach, though? Like, with Stroman, is there any other way to do it?
So I would have backed him off further than they have. Right now, they're going to have him go Sunday against the White Sox, I believe, which gives him about a week between starts. I would have given him a bit more time. I would have given him just a bit more of a breather right now, especially with these two off days. They really could have worked the schedule a bit easier, but...
Although Coors Field.
So that's the other end of it, is that do you really want your struggling pitcher pitching, in the Thunderdome in Denver? At the same time, what the Blue Jays have lined up right now, Marco Estrada, Jay Happ, and Aaron Sanchez are going to pitch at Coors Field, the three fly ball pitchers on the team.
Well, Sanchez being the exception there. But
yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's one of those things where like there's no win. There's no way around that if you're a manager to have to tell a few guys that they're going to be pitching at Coors Field against a pretty good Rockies lineup. I mean, they have some legit power bats there. So yeah, that's going to be an interesting series.
As is often the case with the Toronto Blue Jays, there's no win. There's no win. Here's what's happening with Marcus Stroman. He's leaving pitches up. He doesn't have a good feel for his pitches. And every single pitcher in the major leagues, unless your name's Clayton Kershaw, you're going to go through periods like this where you don't have feel for yourself. Like Mark Burley used to say, you have 11 starts where you have great stuff, you have 11 starts where you have okay stuff, and you have 11 starts where you have garbage stuff. And lately, Marcus Stroman hasn't had his stuff.
We've seen the garbage stuff like all in a row here.
He's going through something right now, but he's learning, and he hasn't had to go through this at a major league level yet. And that, you add in the fact that he's facing the Orioles and Red Sox repeatedly. You add in the fact that this is a guy who is the shortest starting pitcher in the major leagues. So he doesn't, like, it's not like he has the benefit of downward plane. It's not like he's an overpowering pitcher. You know, it's not like he's the kind of guy that's just, you know, if Aaron Sanchez doesn't have a good feel for his two-seamer, it's still 97. He can still blow it by guys. He doesn't have that. And there's also the fact that, you know, of his six pitches, which are all great, there's not a lot of differential between the way they move or where he likes to throw them. They could be very similar. Like, he throws a slider and a curveball, but he throws a tight slider and a curveball. It's not like these big, you see Sanchez's curveball and it's like massive. Stroman's is more of a tight movement. So when you've got six pitches that all move kind of similarly in a similar part of the zone, and you can't put them where you want them to be, you're working with a really thin margin of error.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to that stuff discussion that was happening up here a few minutes ago, where if one pitch resembles the other too similarly, then you might be in a situation where, as an opposing hitter, you don't care what he calls the pitch. If it's a curve or a slider, you can call it whatever he wants. If you can hit it, it doesn't matter.
It's going to be fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
No, and I would agree.
It's fine.
Yeah,
everything's fine.
A month from now, we'll be having a different Marcus Stroman discussion.
What will that discussion be?
Or maybe we'll be having the Aaron Sanchez discussion more
likely. Maybe we'll be having... There's quite a discussion to be had with Aaron Sanchez. This wasn't in the plan. Would you like to have an Aaron Sanchez discussion?
Yeah, I think it's one of the more interesting discussions, really, with the 2016 Blue Jays. Has been from the beginning, and I think it continues to be.
Is he at... Where is he at? He's in the 80s in innings? Is he in the 90s yet?
I think he's around 92.
92 innings.
Yeah.
131 is the career high, I believe, off the top of my head. I might be a few innings off there. Just take it easy. But what? I mean, how far do you let him go?
Well, I can tell you how far I think the Blue Jays will let him go.
How far would you let him go?
I would. I mean, he's one of their two best starters, right? So if he's one of your two best starters, and if you can find ways to get him rest and make sure that he's not pitching when he's fatigued, if I'm running this team, I would say keep him in the rotation. You know, let's see how long it can go. If he can be effective and you're not overdoing it and he's up at 175 at the end of the year, I don't know. I wouldn't lose sleep over that.
To me, as long as the arm angle is consistent, release point consistent, velocity consistent, spin rates consistent, as long as what he's telling trainers in between his starts is consistent, as long as he's bouncing back in the same amount of time, let him go. Like, blow past the innings.
Right. I mean, and that's what is so tough about this decision, is you're taking a guy out who, okay, let's say Estrada's the best one in the rotation right now, because he's been phenomenal.
Undoubtedly.
But if Sanchez is your second best starter, then taking him out of the rotation is going to hurt. And as much as Drew Hutchison is pitching well at AAA right now, that's AAA. We saw him last year. We've seen him before. There's a body of work there, and Drew Hutchison's body of work does not rival what Aaron Sanchez is doing right now.
Let's do another quick poll. Who here thinks Drew Hutchison should be in the Blue Jays rotation right now? No one. This is a good... Oh, we had the photographer. The one Hutch fan. Well, so I can't really jump all over these things that I wanted to jump all over because you people are too intelligent. It's almost like people forgot what Drew Hutchison was last year, right? Like, and people have forgotten, like, watching him because, I don't know, maybe I'm, like, paying too much attention to, you know... to Twitter and people who call into talk radio and people who bother us all the time on the street. But like, if people were pining for Drew Hutchison right now, have you forgotten what he was last season?
Yeah, and he, I honestly think there's another gear there from what he was in 2015, where he can actually be a useful pitcher.
Right.
But is he that much beyond a useful pitcher? I mean, is he someone who's truly more than a number four or five? I would be surprised.
Let's do one more poll. I'm looking at the polls. Michael Saunders, do you agree with this? Is Michael Saunders the best hitter on the Blue Jays this year? Oh.
So just to clarify, are you asking, is he the best hitter or has he been the best hitter?
Has he been the best hitter?
Okay.
Has he been the best hitter? A few more. Still a lot of people leaving the hands down. The statistics disagree with those people.
Yeah, he's been incredible. I'm stunned. Like, every time I look at his numbers, I'm like, okay, this is exactly what Mike Trout is doing, or Xander Bogaerts, or any of the David Ortiz. He's up there in that echelon of hitters, and that is not at all what I was expecting entering this season.
No, I mean, his numbers are right there with Josh Donaldson's, and he's had way less plate appearances.
And Donaldson's the reigning MVP with a and he should be front and center in the discussion for the 2016 MVP, by the way. But he to have Michael Saunders in that conversation offensively, I mean, defensively is another question, on the basis is another question. I think those are weaknesses in his game. But at the plate, he has been incredible.
If Michael Saunders keeps this up, to your mind, is he playing his way into a qualifying offer?
To me, it's not a question. To me, 100% you qualify him if he keeps this up. I think even if he doesn't keep this up, there's a good chance that they would qualify him, because with the season that he's on pace for now, if he can continue this to some extent and finish with, you know, he has 15 homers now, I think, so let's call it 23, 25 at the end of the year. If he has that, then I think he goes out and looks for a multi-year contract at age 29.
So, yeah, if that was going to be my next question to you. If he finishes with 25 bombs, say like a 290 batting average, like 320 on base, do you accept that qualifying offer if you're Michael Saunders?
No, I wouldn't, because I think that the free agent class is pretty weak, and you look ahead a couple off seasons from now, there's not a ton out there coming down the pipeline. So if you're him, you can position yourself as this 29-year-old who's coming off a really good season on a contending team with great
offense. Super healthy.
Well, hey, he's been on the field so far, and that's what counts, right? Like, it's amazing as a free agent how, you know, seasons a couple years ago can just recede into the rearview mirror, and it's so much off your platform season.
If you're a general manager, how many years are you comfortable going with Michael Saunders, considering the decorated injury history?
Well, if I'm a general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, not that many years. If I'm the general manager of you know, another team with a bigger budget, with a big need, like say the Angels, okay? Like, I think if you're the Angels, you should be willing to spend 3 or 4 years, 15, 20 million on Michael Saunders, because he's a good player. But I think they're a bigger market team historically than the Blue Jays, and so they have more margin for error when it comes to free agency.
And a draft pick as well is the other thing you're giving up.
It's a lot. It's crazy to think that this is the discussion that we're actually having about a guy who a few months ago, I mean, you know, he was almost an afterthought when it came to the Blue Jays offense.
So it's a tricky comparison, but I would look at what happened to Marco Estrada last year, right? Marco Estrada got qualified. Marco Estrada got Cy Young votes last year. He was phenomenal. Really, really good. Way better than he had been earlier on in his career. Michael Saunders this year, way better than he's been earlier on in his career. He's going to be 29 in free agency. If he gets qualified, draft pick tied around his neck, that completely submarined Marco Estrada's market. That draft pick, it clearly did, because he accepted a 2-year offer at the Blue Jays to come back and be the best pitcher on the team. I feel like this something similar would happen to Michael Saunders.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and that's the risk that you run. But I think that for guys when they're in free agency or approaching free agency, you don't get there unless you're willing to take some risk, unless you're willing to bet on yourself. That's how these guys get to this point, because they're all offered extensions at some point, or that option is there if they want to pursue it. So he believes in himself, clearly, as a player to get to this point. And I think that taking one more bet on himself, it might backfire, and he could be in Kendrys Morales, Stephen Drew territory, not getting a contract. But on the other hand, I think there's a good chance he would do pretty well.
I think Michael Saunders should believe in himself. I don't know if general managers in baseball or presidents in baseball will believe in him, considering you look at the Toronto Blue Jays didn't want Michael Saunders.
Right, but again, it only takes one. We know the Angels did want Michael Saunders, so you phone up Artie Moreno and you say, hey, we got this guy. He's coming off a 25, 30 homer season, 29 years old. He's your, you know, put him beside Mike Trout. You put him beside Trout and Calhoun, you got yourself an outfield.
Interesting. Yeah. What was our third topic that I've completely forgotten?
we were going to talk Edwin and Jose. Open it up to questions?
Right. Or so both? More options for polls. Jose Bautista, do you think that this season has hurt or helped his free agency cause? Hurt. Hurt? Wow, didn't like the poll. Jose Edwin Encarnacion, hurt or helped his free agency cause? Helped. There we go, I was leading the jury. That's probably the case.
Yeah, I think so, for sure. Yeah. I mean, and like I don't know what you make of the Bautista free agency, but There's obviously a lot of time left, but at this point, I mean, he's just a tick back from where he was in the past 5 years or so. Like, he's still having a good year, but it's not an overwhelming year, and the defense isn't there. He's on the DL. Those little things tend to add up.
I feel it's interesting because going into this season, I would have thought that Bautista's, of the two, Bautista is the guy that you want. And as the season has played out, Edwin Encarnacion started slow, had a slow kind of first 6 weeks, went on like the tear of all tears recently to bring his numbers like way, way, way up. He was in a position where you shouldn't have even thrown him a pitch anywhere near the strike zone. He was phenomenal. And at concurrently, Jose Bautista ran himself into a wall and is now going to be out probably until after the All-Star break.
Yeah.
At a point where Jose Bautista, you know, was not having a Jose Bautista year.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how those, you know, those guys have kind of, I bet you if we did this poll at the beginning of the year, a lot of people might have said Bautista. Because even because Edwin Encarnacion has a couple years on Bautista in the direction that you want to have years, he was the guy with injury concerns coming into this year. He was the guy who you were like, is this body going to hold up?
Right. And I wonder if that, or when that narrative will change around Encarnacion, because he's basically been healthy this year, and even though he doesn't necessarily look healthy, he's on the field, he's hitting home runs. I mean, there's something that doesn't quite add up, right? And I think over the course of the last 5 years, the numbers would say that he has stayed basically healthy.
Basically.
You know, but he's not going to play 160 games, but he'll give you 145, and that's a lot.
He does stay off the DL. As long as it's not a catastrophic injury, he'll play through it. Through, you know, the crazy thumb injury he had last year, wrist stuff. Last year, like, he played through a sports hernia and had to have surgery on it after the year. I mean, he plays through quite a bit.
So if we were having this discussion a few months ago, we probably both would have said that neither one of them's back. Has any of that changed for you?
I still think neither one of them is back.
Yeah.
But I think that the organization is probably thinking more about Edwin Encarnacion right now, because he clearly wants to be here. He clearly likes being here. He'd be an easier sign than Jose is going to be, I think. So I wonder if they are, just with the way things have played out this season, if they are considering it.
Yeah.
But it would take such a payroll increase to even get it done.
Yeah. No, it would be tough for
what
sure.
About you?
No, I don't think that either one of them will be back. I think there's a good chance. I mean, really, as we've talked about before, this team is going to look so different next year on so many different fronts, and I think that's going to be the biggest change of all.
The thing is, you need to bring the payroll up from right now. It's what, 135, 140 around there, and you've already next year you've got Martin, you got Donaldson, you got Tulo, Happ, Estrada. I mean, already in those five, you've probably got $75 to $80 million, like in that range. You want to build a team out from there. If you're going to have to spend $25 million on Edwin Encarnacion, you're at 105 now, and you have $25 million, $30 million left to spend on the rest of your team.
And I think that another element here is that if you let those guys go, you get a top pick. If you keep them, you don't get that pick.
But isn't there a case to be made that the Blue Jays should be increasing payroll?
Yeah. I mean, like, look at the attendance this year. Look at the market.
The Toronto Blue Jays are sixth in the major league in attendance. Yeah, in terms of total attendance and average attendance.
They're at, what is it now, 38,000 a game?
I don't know the number off the top of my head.
I think it's in that range. And but it was another 46 last night, so it's some big number that they're averaging.
Yesterday, for a 4 o'clock start against the Arizona Diamondbacks on a Wednesday afternoon, 47,000 people came out to watch the Toronto Blue Jays.
It's crazy. Against the Diamondbacks.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Crazy. And it's been like that all year.
Yeah.
And fans have come out. Fans have been there. Right. So at what, like, if you're Rogers, what else do you need to see?
Yeah, I mean,
don't tweet this.
But what else
do you need to
right.
see?
And then the TV ratings would be another thing, but they're there as well, right?
They're doing a million a night, and you're making more money off of that. More butts in seats, more people buying parrots, more people buying beers and stuff, right? Like, I absolutely think that if you don't increase payroll after this year, I don't know how you sell it to this fan base after the way they've invested.
Yeah, and yet I would be surprised if they make a huge splash midseason. Personally,
I mean at the trade deadline?
Yeah, at the
no, trade I deadline. Don't think that they're going to do that either. Yeah. But I mean, I think that this coming winter,
right?
You have to. I just think that I don't understand the rationale you would give for not increasing payroll, considering baseball salaries are increasing at a rapid rate.
Yeah.
Considering the marketplace is going up, considering you have more people at the stadium, you're making more money than ever. I don't know how you could sell that.
It makes sense. Yeah, I think it makes complete sense.
You don't think they'll make a big splash at the trade deadline?
No, I don't think so. I think they're going to add pitching. Like, I could see it being a starter. I think they'll try for a starter. I think a reliever, although the bullpen's kind of getting crowded. when you look at Grilly in there, Biagini's in, Cecil's coming back.
Like crowded with medium leverage arms.
Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Hey, it's not the Royals. It's not the Yankees, but it's still crowded. And so I don't know if there's an easy fit in the bullpen if Cecil comes back and Sanchez moves there as expected. So I wonder if they try to add a starter and add some depth that way. But I don't think it'll be Sonny Gray or Julio Teheran or one of the big names out there.
You know, I don't know if you need that. Five and dive guy. Like, nothing wrong. Right. Give me J-Hap. Give me another Hap. Yeah. Six innings, three runs. Like, that's fine.
And as we saw last year, sometimes it's the Haps of the world who go out and surprise down the stretch. If you pick the right guy, if you find someone who's, you know, poised for a breakout, maybe you're looking at his stuff or his, you know, you're looking at his velocity, whatever it is, someone trending in the right direction. The Yankees did it with Brandon McCarthy a couple of years ago. The Pirates did it with Hap last year. If you find one of those guys, you're not going to have to give up top prospects.
Think the Pittsburgh Pirates are missing the prospects they gave up for J-Hap?
No, they're missing him, though. Man, look at their rotation right now. It's a disaster. So that's what you want to avoid, is to try to get some solid pitching.
But if the Blue Jays went out and got... So I think they need another back-end reliever more than anything right now. Because you just can't bet on Brett Cecil right now.
Yeah.
Considering what he did earlier in the year, like if they can get 2013, 14, 15 Brett Cecil back, great. Fantastic. I'm not sure you can count on that at this point. You have to see what he is. So if you're bringing Sanchez into that bullpen, you know, as soon as Sanchez is too, like, shove it up your ass guys, I feel like you need one more.
Yeah. Yeah, and that would help. I mean, I think that the deadline is one of those times where you're going to overpay for any kind of pitching. It really is the kind of currency of that late July market. But if you can get someone who is an elite late inning reliever, then you're going to be well positioned. You'll find the room.